Welcome back to another edition of the D'Antonio Wingcast. This is Ben from Blazers Edge. I'm here with KP2, who may very well soon get his nickname upgraded if Kevin Pritchard gets canned this summer. KP2, how does it feel to see KP1 struggle out of nowhere so quickly after everything looked so great a couple weeks ago?
Well, it's unbelievable. I mean, if you would have called us and told us a week ago that we'd be sitting here talking about whether Kevin Pritchard was, within the next couple of months, still going to be the general manager of the Portland Trail Blazers, we would have laughed at you. That was a preposterous notion. And the way that things have spiraled out of control since word first leaked that Tom Penn was fired last week is, I mean, I don't see how anyone could have anticipated it. I don't think you did you?
I certainly did not anticipate it, and you know what? The reason why I didn't anticipate it is because I don't think either KP or Tom Penn themselves anticipated it, and I think that's a big part of what's going on here is I think that they are feeling pretty dang blindsided. I think we should go through this entire topic and tease out some of the points that may or may not have been touched on. I haven't really written that much sort of opinion or analysis about it, mostly just kind of the facts because so much information has been coming out. I don't think you've written anything, opinion or analysis on the situation yet, have you?
I haven't even tweeted about it. I've been kind of staying away since it's so much speculation. But that's what, speculation is what the Wingcast does best.
Well, that's what I was going to say. This is an exclusive opportunity for us to completely unload on all the speculation, all of our own thoughts, all of our personal opinions about all the key players. Where you can get, nowhere else can you get this this kind of access and this kind of information, right?
No, it's one of a kind.
All right, let's start with Tom Penn. Penn was fired, quote-unquote, abruptly, but now it's starting to look like maybe it wasn't such an abrupt firing if there had been, months of uneasiness building up to it. First of all, in your limited interactions with Tom Penn, what kind of a person would you describe? What's your background with Tom Penn? And if it's not a ton personal, maybe professional, what do you think of the guy? Or do you think he's cracked up to be in terms of the salary cap guru reputation that he has?
Well, I can't say we debated the cap a handful of occasions that I have chatted with Tom. But I mean, his reputation seems well-earned. And as far as just kind of his attitude and the questions that have been raised about that in the past week, certainly there was nothing like that in our in our chats. He was very friendly and open, and I have nothing ill to say about Tom Penn. So I think that about covers it for me.
All right, I think I'll give you my take on Tom Penn. I think Tom Penn, of all of some of the key players here, I think he was maybe the moodiest. He's the most prone to be, really friendly, really outgoing one day, and then maybe a little bit more reserved or, even bordering on paranoid, as some people have called him, the next day. And that's just kind of the person that he was. He's obviously a super intelligent person, and kind of along with that, super high IQ and that super knowledge base, goes a lot of confidence. I think, when you go into a fourth grade math class and you're trying to teach them some of your statistics and they just don't get it, it can get kind of frustrating, can it, KP2? I mean, you've told me about this when you go on these field trips and you're trying to teach people, value over replacement or whatever it might be, and these fourth graders just don't get it. That's basically Tom Penn's life. So I think that, over time, that kind of builds up a sense of maybe not superiority might be going too far, but just an idea that he's very confident. Maybe bordering on cocky in terms of, knowledge that he has, especially compared to the knowledge that the media might possess on the arcane topics of the collective bargaining agreement. So how has that expressed itself? Well, occasionally he can be pretty direct in his answers or pretty blunt in his communication style. But for the most part, he's a really a friendly guy, and he prefers not to be in the limelight. I don't think he necessarily wants all the cameras on him. But he did kind of follow in Pritchard's shoes in some ways with wanting to be a really hands-on executive. So, he really kind of has always kind of felt a chip on his shoulder in terms of, he doesn't have the basketball knowledge maybe that guys who played or had coached the game previously. So I think he put himself in draft workout situations. He put himself in the war room. He put himself on, doing the research and the analysis of players' skills, maybe more than you might expect from a salary cap guru, because that's really what he wanted to improve on himself so he could take the next step, maybe one day become a general manager around the NBA. So I think, that was part of his personality. There was a little chip on his shoulder in that, he didn't have any professional basketball background, so everyone was, constantly questioning him, does he have a basketball mind, or is he just kind of the smart lawyer type? And I certainly think he wanted to be, taken as, a basketball mind as well as a smart lawyer type, which he obviously was. So I think that was my general impression of Tom Penn. Is a really nice guy, to the site. If you look, he gave us an interview very early. It was one of the first big interviews that we did. He was very straightforward in the interview, talking about, who he was, what his vision was, answering some, pretty basic salary cap questions. And from there, he was always happy to clarify something, whether it was a hardship exemption application or whatnot. If he could answer that question, he would be happy to do it. So that all leads us up to the firing. My response to the firing was, well, he did tick somebody off, or he said something that, he couldn't take back. And that was my initial response. Now, as it's come out, it sounds like maybe that's not so much the case. How much stock do you put in the idea that these guys have kind of been dead men walking here for most of the season, that their agent's been looking out for, other positions, and that, maybe, a Pritchard Penn package deal could have found themselves, at a different destination come next season? Do you think that this decision was made previously, or are you in the camp that says, Penn did something, irrevocable, and that's why they had to can him?
Well, here's the thing is, I mean, I think if they did know that, then we wouldn't expect to see the reaction from Kevin Pritchard that we have. If he knew all along that he was in trouble, he wouldn't have seemed, I don't think, as again, blindsided, to use that term, and as down as he did in his press conference yesterday, Does that make sense?
Totally.
So, I think that the question of timing with the Tom Penn move is obviously the most interesting part of this, which is, was there something that precipitated making an immediate change, or was it, a warning sign, so to speak, to Kevin Pritchard? I mean, I don't know that we've gotten solid information on that either way, and until we know Pritchard's fate, I'm not sure that we will ever have any idea of that.
So one idea that was floated was that they fired Penn as soon as they possibly could after the season ticket renewal deadline had passed. Do you put any stock in the idea that they would make the move from that kind of a financial standpoint, the idea that, hey, maybe he had, this had already come to a head previously and they were just waiting until, sort of the moment of minimum impact on the bottom line, and that's when they make the move? Or do you think that's just sort of a coincidence?
When that idea was first floated, it seemed a little silly to me because, who, I mean, not to marginalize Blazers and Rangers, but I don't think most season ticket holders are that invested in Tom Penn and the vice president of basketball operations and things like that. But you viewed this as connected to Kevin Pritchard's future, and obviously Pritchard has, a strong place amongst Blazers fans, and, there's going to be a lot of unrest and uncertainty if his future is not clear in Portland. So I think that's possible that that could have been the timing.
I think it's definitely not. I don't think you can rule it out. I'm not going to say for sure that that's what happened, but it is pretty coincidental. I don't think it can be ruled out. We're probably never going to know, but it's certainly something to consider. The most interesting thing about the timing to me was it was so shortly after, Sloan and then the whole Big East tournament, and that was kind of, both of those are kind of GM or management summits, and part of the reason why when Penn was first fired, I thought that this was going to, be a bad thing for Pritchard. I mean, almost immediately it was kind of turning in my head like, uh-oh, this is very strange. If they can't get a new assistant GM for KP ASAP, this is going to be big trouble because KP doesn't have that knowledge set. And one of the things that kind of underscored that to me was, at Sloan, like we talked about, KP was so relaxed, so happy. And, who was right there, right by his side? It's Tom Penn. We're sitting at lunch and it's, Kevin, Tom, and a few other executives from various teams around the league. I mean, those guys were kind of inseparable. You know, who did KP joke about? Who played the good cop, bad cop routine? Well, it was KP and Tom. I mean, that's just kind of how they were. You know, Penn's always there trying to make sure that, the team's secrets don't get out, and KP's there, trying to be the friendly, affable person who really enjoys statistics and wants to talk to everybody about it. And, like I said, the Blazers had, what, nine people there? But, who was KP with the entire time? Tom. Who did KP go and scout the Big East tournament with? Tom. I mean, that was kind of like their package deal. And that's how they presented themselves around the league. And so with Tom going, almost immediately, I was like, oh, God, this is not good. Why would they possibly do this? And, my initial reaction was, well, he had probably done something, personal, or he had, said or done something at this GM summit, the Big East tournament, that put him in professional, bad graces. But when you get right down to it, Penn's agent did all the talking here, and KP did none of the talking. I thought that was a clear warning sign that something further was coming. And what did you make of Legarry's comments that came out right after, when he's saying this could be a drive-by on Pritchard, and that's what he said to Canzano, and then later to Henry, he said, we've been or we're not sure what's going to happen to KP. Clearly this is something that, is directed at Kevin as well as at Tom. What did you make of those comments? At first, did you believe them? Did it take you a while to sort of ease into them? Did you question Legarry's credibility like some people did, or what was your general reaction to that step of the timeline?
I don't know. I mean, they were in the context of so many rumors that we were getting thrown out there at that point that it was a little difficult to separate what seemed reasonable and potentially factual from what seemed like fiction. I mean, there was the first day there were reports that this was a Pritchard top Tom Penn issue, that the two of them had started feuding, which didn't make any sense, I think, to those of us who had watched them interact and since has rather quickly been quashed. So, with an agent, they're always looking out for their client's best interests, and that may not always, that involves a heavy amount of spin. So I think you take anything that Warren Legarry or any agent says with a heavy grain of salt. But, I think he was the first one to kind of tie this back to this has an effect on Pritchard's status or his future as well. So I think that's where that has kind of played out as something that was prescient.
Well, the one thing that stood out to me about his statements is, I don't talk to agents a ton, but in my few experiences that I have talked to agents, they'll tell you all sorts of crazy stuff off the record, but then their on-the-record statements will be very simple. And if they do go on the record about something, it will sort of be transparently, positive in terms of their client. So, like, a great example is Paul Millsap's, like, uncle slash agent, or whoever that shady character was last summer, saying that Millsap can shoot three-pointers, he's got all this range, he can be used in a variety of ways, the Blazers could play him alongside LaMarcus Aldridge. I mean, basically saying that this guy could probably run a team, he could probably run a one-man full-court press, he's going to win the NBA title by himself. I mean, just going on and on and on about all these imagined skills that Paul Millsap has that he just hasn't shown over his NBA career. That's what you expect from an agent, to me anyways. And I thought, initially when I read Legarry's comments, I thought, okay, well, he's just trying really hard to shift the discussion here away from Penn's credibility because so much of it focused on what did Penn do wrong, and he's just trying to push it back onto an easy target, which would be the Vulcans, because there's already significant distrust among Blazer fans towards the Vulcan management, and rightfully so. So I thought, okay, that's kind of what he was doing. But as he continued to escalate it, I mean, really what he did was he intentionally brought Kevin into it, and he kind of treaded on Kevin's credibility and his standing in the Blazers community by bringing Kevin into that, And in a way, I'm not sure if he really was serving Kevin's best interests with the Blazers. And what it really kind of ended up sounding like was this is a pretty desperate act by this agent. I mean, this is not somebody who's trying to, secure a contract extension or secure some firmer standing for his client, Kevin Pritchard, within the Blazers organization. I mean, this is almost a guy who's tempting the Vulcans to fire Kevin. You know what I mean? I mean, or he's trying to throw up a late warning flag across the entire league to say, hey, my client's available, or he's going to be available soon, with some of these things that he was saying, because it was just so reckless, you know? And some of that goes with the territory, but frankly, during the season, during an emotionally charged time like this, the playoff run, I mean, this is not at all what KP wants. And maybe he wants that message out, but he's certainly never going to say anything like that. And, you know, at some point, I was starting to wonder, like, you know, LeGarry, does he even know what he's saying here? I mean, is he under control? Or are you going to say all this was calculated and he has no choice? I mean, I guess you could read it both ways.
Well, I think it was interesting the way that Pritchard distanced himself from LeGarry's comments during yesterday's media availability. I mean, I think you can look at it that way. Like, you know, that's one of the tricks that agents like to use is, for example, you know, Pritchard can potentially say, "I've never asked for an extension." You know, what you told the press yesterday, well, he never asked for an extension, but his agent did. You know, there's a lot of ways that you can sort of use that dynamic to you know, play the semantics and take advantage of that. So, you know, but it's tough to say. I mean, as far as the desire to resolve, I don't think that, you know, by bringing Pritchard into it, LeGarry definitely brought a support from him among Blazers fans, but I don't think it could have helped his position with management to bring that out in the public.
Oh, it's certainly not. And that was, you know, one of the most annoying things about Larry Miller's statements at yesterday's press conference. And there was a lot of annoying things about Larry Miller's statements at yesterday's press conference. But probably the most annoying thing was that the only person that he really singled out as sort of, you know, not carrying themselves properly through this entire situation was Pritchard's agent. I mean, he didn't want to take any responsibility or shed any light on what happened with the Penn situation. He didn't want to give, you know, any inkling that that decision had been made by people above him and it was out of his hands, which it certainly seems like it was, given how little he was able to explain about the situation. He didn't want to, you know, give credence. He didn't even really address a lot of the writers on the subject. I mean, he really kind of seemed like he wanted to blame this entire situation, all the fallout, on Pritchard's agent. And, you know, basically saying, you know, we weren't the ones who made this about Kevin Pritchard, implying that it was LeGarry. And he also said he was, you know, very surprised by LeGarry's comments. It's like, how are you possibly surprised by this dude? You just fired his best friend. Look at him over there. You know, he's not in tears, but he's looked worse than I've ever seen him in his entire life, except for when Craig Oden had a season-ending knee injury. I mean, he's obviously embarrassed. I think shame is a good word that maybe hasn't been used yet to describe Pritchard's appearance yesterday at the press conference. I mean, he did not want to be there at all, obviously, and he did not want to have to, you know, basically kiss the ring. In other words, you know, kiss Paul Allen's ring. And prove his, you know, loyalty to a franchise that he's worked hard for 3 years, underpaid as well. I mean, that's not what Kevin Pritchard wanted to do. And yet, the only person that Larry Miller could find, you know, any reason to criticize was Pritchard's agent. And it's like, dude, come on, are you serious? Like, what? How did you expect this guy to react? You know?
Well, I think in Larry Miller's defense, you know, it's been made pretty clear that depending on what actually went into the decision to fire Tom Penn, it's possible that legally they may not be allowed to talk about it, or certainly that it may not be good even for Tom Penn for them to talk about it. I mean, you know, the secrecy opens up a lot of speculation, which is why I'm generally a believer in being as forthcoming as possible, because you know, rarely is the truth as bad as what some of the speculation can be, because that runs the gamut. But in this case, they may not have had a choice as far as saying that. And you know, I think the real issue that they've brought up well on the site is the one of a united front versus the way that the press availability was handled yesterday. It seemed kind of like a contentious thing, even to the extent that they didn't have Pritchard and Miller talk at the same time, that instead it was Pritchard first and then Miller talking about each other, was seemed very odd to me.
Well, I think that was the only way they could play it because I don't think, KP is a man of principle, right? I mean, I think that he's the kind of person that, yeah, he probably wants to get paid more money. Yeah, he probably, wants a, maybe a cooler title than general manager or whatever. I'm sure he, wants to have the next highest class BMW or Mercedes-Benz convertible. He wants to have the nice clothes. All these guys do, right? So you can't really hold that against him. But he is a man of principle. He's the kind of person who believes in handshake deals. That's just his personality. From the Midwest, yeah, it's kind of straight talking, open and honest, transparency. That's kind of his whole thing, right? And he wears all of his emotions on his body and on his face. I mean, you could tell how he felt about it. And Larry Miller, frankly, just does not view the situation in that same way. Larry Miller viewed the situation as he's stuck between, fulfilling ownership demands and trying to, back one of his very valued employees. And, crossing ownership could cost him his job, and backing his employee, Kevin Pritchard, isn't going to cost him his job. So which side did Larry Miller take? Well, obviously he's going to take the side that's going to protect his own job and cover his own ass. I mean, that's basically what this came down to. Pritchard no longer is really able to cover his own ass. He's out in the open, and he's kind of at the whims of however they want to handle this. And most likely the clock is already ticking. And, in some senses, Larry Miller kind of pulled a pin on the grenade yesterday with his inability to back Pritchard in any meaningful way. So that's, I mean, they didn't really have any way they could put it together because I don't think they're on the same page at all, And like if they were sitting at a table, side by side, I think the tension would have made potentially have been even more obvious. And I think that Pritchard, even though he said he doesn't feel burned, it's difficult to imagine that he doesn't feel burned. And it's certainly given how close he works with Larry and how much communication there's been over the last couple of years and the success that those guys have had in, turning the franchise from, a team that had no fans in the building, a team that had very little credibility in the community, to a team that's, resurfaced the basketball courts of every PIL school, has, super successful Make It Better community outreach program. And, obviously a crazy sellout streak in the building as well. Those guys have worked that side by side. They've done that. And, he probably feels like, you know what? Larry Miller let me down. I expected more from the person directly above me, and that's how he should feel. But like I said, Larry Miller is basically putting himself before his loyalty to his employees, in my opinion.
Well, Larry Miller is a businessman. I think that, and KP is not, which I think it could be one of the issues here that's creating this wedge between him and potentially the Vulcans. We've heard about the Brandon Roy situation, and I think that there's such a giant gulf here between where fans were on the Brandon Roy thing and where the business side of the Blazers apparently was on this Brandon Roy thing, and just a stunning miscalculation on their part to not understand how much fans were going to react negatively to the thought that you would be nickel and diming your star player, the guy who has brought you back to the playoffs, and to be so concerned over whether you're guaranteeing the fourth year of his contract. I mean, I think that's what one of the things we're seeing here is that apparently the business side of the Blazers, whether it's strictly at the ownership level or whether it's below that, is completely out of touch with the fans and what they want. I mean, obviously that was the case a few years ago, but I thought we had moved past that.
I totally agree. And not only are they out of touch with the fans, they're out of touch with the league standard, Brandon Roy would get the same deal in 30 markets, would he not?
Yeah, I mean, he's earned it with what he's done.
That's exactly so that, I mean, not only are they just completely clueless about the fan reaction was prompted from a complete understanding of how the NBA and the markets work. The fans are not caught up in Brandon Roy, superstar Brandon Roy. I want my kid, I'm going to have my kid get his jersey. I mean, some fans are, but a majority of the fans in Portland are smarter than your average fan. They understand what Brandon Roy has earned. They understand what he's produced. They understand where he stands in the league statistical categories, how many game winners he's had, the success he's produced in terms of the win-loss column. They get all of that. It's not like and they're not going to just forget that because somebody wants to save some money, because they realize that if you don't throw the money at Brandon Roy, somebody else is going to throw the exact same money at Brandon Roy. And the last thing you want to do is see the first few years of his career and then have him go somewhere else. I mean, fans aren't dumb. They get it. And so I thought, that whole thing with the Brandon Roy negotiations, there's just no way that the Vulcans can pin that on Kevin Pritchard and say, oh, he didn't represent our position strongly enough. Give me a freaking break, But this does raise a good point is, okay, let's look at it from their perspective. Let's say we have an axe to grind with KP, and our job is to try to get KP out of the picture because we have somebody else that we want to bring into the picture, right? Which of KP's moves are you going to be able to legitimately criticize on basketball decisions? So let's say he's got a sterling record personality-wise, no internal complaints. The only thing that we're looking for here are basketball moves that KP made or didn't make that you're going to be able to tell Paul Allen, hey, he screwed up on A, B, and C. Which moves do you point to?
Well, I mean, in terms of major moves, I mean, I think the only thing you can really point to is if you start going to the Greg decision and Oden versus Durant. But I mean, I don't think you're going to win any favor with the fan base there in terms of, I think that people still, besides yourself, of course, Kevin Durant supporter to the end, still think that was the right move to make, even if it hasn't necessarily worked out just because of the injuries. So and beyond that, I mean, I guess the way things played out over the summer in terms of going after Hito Turkoglu and having him decide to sign elsewhere, but the way Andre Miller has played the last couple of months, I don't think you can argue that didn't work out for the Blazers ultimately. And I've still maintained, on the record that I don't think that there's anyone that could have gotten at last year's trade deadline for Raphael Francis' contract that would have been better than Andre Miller has been.
Yeah, so let's go through some of these. All right, what about Bayless for Jack?
I mean, yeah, I don't think it's been a slam dunk so far, but
But
Bayless is really
nothing
trying
to outright criticize.
to.
Okay, so not like a fireable. Or basically, what we're going to go through is go through all these and look for fireable offenses. So Bayless for Jack. No.
No.
Okay, let's do Blake and Outlaw for Camby.
No, I still maintain it's an A-plus deal.
Okay, let's look at letting Channing Frye go to Phoenix.
He wasn't the right fit in Portland, but anyone who thought this time a year ago that he was all of a sudden going to develop into the league's best 3-point shooter would be lying.
Okay, extending LaMarcus for the salary that they gave him instead of allowing him to become a restricted free agent.
I think it was the right move to make.
Yeah, I think it
Maybe a
was the
little
right
bit
move to
early.
make too, but if I'm one of the Vulcans, I have a bigger problem with the LaMarcus deal than I do with the Roy deal. Because if you're coming from their perspective where they thought, oh my God, Brandon Roy is going to get a 14-year guaranteed, and what the standard market rate is for guys like that, then they're probably going to have an even bigger problem paying a number two or potentially number three guy $10 million a year over that length of time. So I would say maybe that's one where they look at and say that wasn't the right move. But do you have any problem with it, or do I have any problem with it? I don't. Do you?
I mean, I think it was a move that they had to make to keep the core together. And if LaMarcus Aldridge is on the free agent market next summer, and teams like the Knicks are striking out on their first options, does Aldridge all of a sudden become a very attractive guy to them? Yes, I think he does.
No doubt. Okay, so that's easy enough. Basically, he would be in the Rudy Gay situation, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and see, I think Rudy Gay is gone from Memphis. I do not see him looking back. Here, I'll make a prediction on the Wingcast. Rudy Gay will be a New York Knick.
And well,
How do you
here's
like
my
that?
prediction is that Rudy Gay will be an LA Clipper. So,
Oh, interesting. Very interesting. Okay, well, that'll be good. We'll have to revisit this in a couple of months. All right, let's go. Keep going through these moves. Okay, so what about the idea? Let's see here. Who else? Okay, so Oden versus Durant. Can you fault him for that? It was the wrong pick at the time. No question about it, in my opinion. But it was a pick that everybody signed off on. Ownership was involved in it, right? So that's not a fireable offense.
and I was a Durant fan, maybe not to the extent that you were, but I was certainly thrilled that we were getting him in Seattle. But how many out of 30 NBA general managers, how many of them would have picked Oden and how many of them would have picked Durant? The answer is something like 27-3, 28-2, isn't it?
Yeah. So okay, well, so that can't be fireable. Okay, what about the trade for Nicholas Batum?
Hey, slam dunk. And
Okay, what
a
about
Batum shakalaka at that, I suppose.
Indeed. What about Rudy Fernandez?
On balance, a terrific move. I mean, as unhappy as he may be, and whether that's a part of this issue or not, that to get him as the 24th pick for cash. And by the way, I'll segue quickly. One of the complaints that we often hear from the anonymous GMs around the league who criticize Kevin Pritchard is, oh, he's just using Paul Allen's cash. Well, guess what? Paul Allen has had cash for the last 20 years, and previous general managers and regimes have had the same benefit of Paul Allen's cash, but all of them tried to use it to spend the payroll up into the $60 million, pay luxury tax. Disastrous. Didn't work at all. Nobody realized how bad that was going to be at the time, in fairness to Bob Whitsitt. But it quickly became clear that going into the luxury tax is not a good way to operate a team because it limits your flexibility so much. We've seen the same thing with the Knicks. What Pritchard hit on was the strategy of, instead of using that money for the luxury tax, where it's going to count double, let's spend it on draft picks, where we're going to have them cheap for 4 years, be able to stay essentially under the cap as they were this last offseason, and we're still not going to be paying double because we're not going to be in the luxury tax. So I think that was probably the best thing of Pritchard's career.
No doubt. Okay, well, I would completely agree with that. So these guys are not fireable offenses. So, okay, that brings us to the idea of stashing and or quote unquote wasting first round picks on guys like Kluivert and stashing guys like Freeland and Kapponen overseas where they've got cap holds. They may or may not be developing into players that can come over and play in Portland. They're limiting your cap flexibility a little bit. And what about the idea that, they've taken that too far, it's costing Paul Allen too much money, and it's limiting their flexibility, and maybe there's a better way to do it and just focus more on players who can actually play and contribute as opposed to developing this like 20 deep roster of players all around the world. What about that strategy? Is that fireable?
No, not fireable. I mean, I think that what we've seen is it would be preferable to do that with second round picks where they're not going to count against the cap for the years that you have them overseas. So that was a little bit of an issue. And I'm not sure that Kapponen or Freeland has developed as quickly as the Blazers have hoped, but ultimately that's a minor deal in the scheme of things. And if you look at the Kluivert pick, for example, well, the Blazers ultimately got the depth they wanted out of their pick, and Dante Cunningham in particular, and Jeff Pindergraf, so I don't think you can raise too much of an issue with that.
So basically what we should conclude after this exhaustive summary of all of Pritchard's moves is that he hasn't done anything that's truly fireable from a basketball standpoint. He
Well,
still deserves his job on the merits of the basketball stuff.
I think if you're going to fire him on basketball grounds, it's not going to be any one single move, but I think it's the fact that the team, that you're the eighth seed this year. I think that potentially has put him on shakier ground. There's a lot of talk about this speeding up the timeline, whatever that means. But, I mean, do you think that there's any way that Pritchard can be faulted for the way the team has played this year, or was inevitable given the injuries that they've faced?
I don't see how they could have done any better, especially with Brennan and Roy missing such a long stretch. I mean, if there's anything that I can point to being the biggest change in victory totals aside from Oden's injury and Batum's injury, that obviously cost them a bunch of games, it was Nate McMillan's decision to not start Andre Miller from day one. If there's anything that's costing the Blazers multiple victories, that's the decision. If they had got things clicking earlier, allowed Roy and Miller to develop from day one, from training camp day one, I think you probably have a few more victories on your overall palette. But KP has always said, I'm not going to try to look down over Nate McMillan's shoulders, and I'm just going to let Nate coach. And Nate apparently had his vision of how he wanted things to do. It didn't work out. He ended up changing his vision. They moved Blake, and they get back to a point where, okay, Andre Miller is now in the starting role, and they're sort of learning on the fly here during the second half of the season. They've been playing some of their better basketball recently with both of those guys in the backcourt together. So if I point to anything, I point to that. I don't point to anything that KP's done. In fact, I mean, you can look at move after move KP made, signing Juwan Howard, drafting Dante Cunningham, even the idea of having Webster extended to that pretty reasonable extension so that he could fill in and take big minutes in January, drafting Bayless so he was able to plug in and take more minutes at both the one and two, even though, Bayless has kind of gotten a knock in the past for not really having a definite position. That helped him a little bit when they needed him at both spots. when Blake went down with pneumonia. And then obviously when Roy was out, it was nice to have a guy who could play one and two, take the scoring load some nights, shift over to more of a facilitator other nights. So I'm not sure what, you criticize KP for doing. I mean, if, I don't know. I don't think there's any fireable grounds. I don't think there's any case you can make upon a basketball perspective that KP should be fired this offseason. At the very least, he's earned through the coming season. And if you want to up the pressure on him so that, he understands that he needs to be spending this summer trying to make his team compete for a title, then I think you can make that known to him without firing his right-hand man and, the salary cap brains behind the operation. I think there's other ways you can get that message across, and certainly there's more private, discreet ways you can get that same message across without putting him in front of cameras, cutting his legs off, basically. There's better ways to handle this. And what's troubling to me is how many other franchises around the NBA are this dysfunctional when it comes to the public. I mean, you look maybe at the Clippers. You look maybe at Isaiah's Knicks. I mean, are we putting the Blazers in maybe the bottom 10% in terms of how they've got their stuff together when it comes to presenting their front office to the league? And this is not something you see happen in Houston.
Well, I mean, that's where they were 5 years ago, unquestionably. I don't think anyone would have argued that. And, I think that there was the thought that things had turned around, that there was a rough patch and the Blazers were through it and they had reconnected with the fans. And, as much as you said about Brandon Roy earlier that it's not specific to Blazers fans, there's obviously something special here in terms of the relationship that people in Portland have with the team. Is the only major pro sports team in town, is a team that in a small town that kind of views itself as fighting against maybe some of these bigger markets with NBA teams. There's a closeness here that I think has to be taken into account in the way you run the franchise. So I think it's definitely possible that they could be getting back to that point because Pritchard was a big factor in moving them past it.
It's a shame, isn't it? Are you going to be sad if KP goes, well, here's what a question that someone posed to me. What are the odds that KP's the general manager opening day the next season?
I mean, I don't know right now. 20% maybe? Is that optimistic?
No, I think I was going to say 1 in 4. So I think that, yeah, we're kind of in the same ballpark, which is just horrible to think. I mean, obviously it should be 99% based on the merits of what he's accomplished. But yeah, I would say, 1 in 5, 1 in 4, I think that's the right ballpark. I mean, here, let's attack that a different way. What's the scenario that sees KP back? What has to happen?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, do you feel like it has to have something to do with on-court success? Do they have to win a playoff series?
See, I'm not so sure. And then that was floated yesterday, to Miller, is kind of the idea that, like, hey, if the Blazers win a series, does that mean KP's going to be safe? I think that more than anything that happens on court, because of the way this team is currently assembled, the fact that they don't have Odin, I think, and where they are in the standings. I mean, it's not like they're going to be shooting up, to the fourth seed and able to have home court advantage, which maybe would, help drive them to a playoff success. I'm not sure anyone around the franchise truly believes they're going to win a playoff series, so I'm not sure if that's really the expectation. And all their public comments have been, we just want to get to the playoffs, which kind of means, we're trying to set ourselves up, for a first round exit mentally, to me at least. I don't think it's as important as the on-court success. I think it needs to be like a face-to-face sit down where they just clear everything out. KP is allowed to say his side. Allen and whatever Vulcans are allowed to say their side. And, what it really hinges on is the idea that, the relationship between Paul and Kevin, do they see eye to eye still about the franchise? Does Paul truly believe that Kevin is working in the franchise's best interest and not in his own best interest? To me, I think that should be a no-brainer, but maybe Paul, with the people in his ear, doesn't believe that. If that message is able to get across and it's allowed to get across, and they don't already have someone waiting in the wings, which, they very well might, then I think that you could see all this kind of patched up. And, the Vulcans making the decision that the easier route is to just hire an assistant general manager for the short term, let KP fill out his contract, and then, make the decision at the end of next season. I think that's the cheapest, simplest way to handle this going forward. now that you've kind of gotten your statement of loyalty publicly from Kevin Pritchard, if you're the Vulcans. But whether that's what they wanted, or if they don't really care about that, they've already got someone else in mind. This situation does have the potential, of the Vulcans basically just kind of executing almost, if you want to call it, a hostile takeover, where they have a candidate in mind, and the name that has been popped up is Warkentin, obviously from Denver. He doesn't have a extension himself going into the future, and so there's the possibility that they've kind of, tapped him as KP's replacement, as the guy who's, the more experienced hand who's going to be able to take the Blazers to the next level, so to speak. Do you see, that potential there? The idea that maybe he's, all of Kevin Pritchard's public apologies really isn't going to do him much good, because the decision's already been made by people who aren't really going to be moved by his public appeal, and they're more concerned with getting, quote unquote, their guy, as opposed to KP installed in that position. I mean, do you think that's a reasonable possibility? Or do you think that, if they were to fire Kevin Pritchard, they were kind of open it up all the way and maybe do a more thorough search?
I think if you are going to make a move with a guy who has been as successful as Pritchard is, you better have someone in mind, I would say. So I would lean toward that direction. And I mean, I think the interesting thing we didn't bring up earlier when we kind of got off on the is this a justifiable firing if they fire him on basketball grounds, is the ultimate reason it's not is that if Pritchard is fired, there's probably going to be three or four teams that are going to be lining up with interest in his services based on what he's done in Portland. I think that's the ultimate test. As for Mark Warkentin specifically, I think that he's a guy who, his potential ties are obvious. He's worked for the Blazers in the past, still lives in Oregon. Makes some sense on those grounds, and he's certainly someone who's had a lot of success with the Denver Nuggets, and has been willing to. He's kind of an old school guy. Was a scout for a long time. Was involved in UNLV's run back in the days. That's where he kind of made his name. But he's also shown willingness to embrace analytics. He hired Dean Oliver and gave him a director title in Denver and made him a bigger part of their organization than a statistical analyst ever had been for an NBA team before. So, there's a lot to like about what he's done with the Nuggets and building that roster.
So, here's my question about him. Why isn't Denver extending him if he's done all of these great things? I mean, is there a personality conflict there? I mean, I just don't understand. Obviously, his motivations to get to the team, Portland's team, if he lives here, are obvious. But doesn't he also have a second motivation, which would be he doesn't necessarily have a guaranteed future in Denver, and so he's looking for a landing spot?
The dynamics of Denver's front office, based on what one has read in the news reports, are interesting. They have a lot of people there. They have Rex Chapman, is I believe either director or vice president of player personnel in that role. They have Warkentin as GM, and then they have Brett Baraup as an advisor to Stan Kroenke, who has been a very hands-on owner in terms of the basketball operations side of things. So, I think that it's possible it's a case where, he would feel that he has more control of things in Portland than he does as the general manager in Denver.
And he really has nothing to lose if, with his, if his name comes up in Portland, that only increases his leverage in Denver, right? So, I mean, if in one scenario, if he is going to stay in Denver, then the interest from Portland obviously increases his negotiating capacity. If he's going to leave Denver, obviously increased interest from Portland is going to, either A, lead for him to go to Portland, or B, make him seem like a more attractive target for other teams that might potentially have general manager jobs opening up, right? So this is pretty much a no-lose for him.
Well, the only question is if you overplay your hand at some point and people become upset that you're leveraging these other job offers, which is what, was it Wojnarowski or Vesey that wrote about Kiki Vandeweghe? I can't actually recall between those two now.
It was Betsy.
Okay. Supposedly happened to him in a similar situation with the same team, oddly. And that supposedly is maybe a factor in the Tom Penn situation. If this, that's one of the weirdest things is that this Minnesota job offer has been dragged out, and I kind of, on the one hand, It's a weird situation with a lot of airing of dirty laundry between teams because now, the Blazers have confirmed that Minnesota offered this job to Penn, which the Timberwolves said publicly they didn't offer him. So someone is not telling the truth here, and there's a lot of again, dirty laundry getting aired.
Well, yeah, like you said, overplaying hands, that is the big danger here. And this is like a giant game of poker, or almost a giant game of like duck, duck, goose, or where you're pulling one seat out and there's going to be one person left standing at the end or whatever. Kind of feels like right now that KP might be that guy who doesn't have a chair when it's all said and done. But like you said, his reputation around the league is sterling. He will get other offers. I mean, let's name some of the spots that he might make sense for. Washington, would you agree?
Well, they don't have an opening yet, but they potentially could.
Yeah, indeed. New Jersey.
Yeah, I mean, if Prokhorov, when he takes over the team, wants to make a splash, is looking to spend on an established GM, is not happy with Rod Thorne, and from the perspective of somebody going to work for the Nets, it's a phenomenal opportunity with the cap space they have, the assets they already have, and the potential to land a top one or two pick next in June.
Well, in terms of overplaying our hands, KP, would you be willing to riot in the street for Kevin Pritchard? I mean, would you take up a flame? Would you take up a stick? Would you maybe get a spear? Would you be rioting if they let KP go? Or what's your reaction going to be? Are you going to do a 5,000-word flame piece online to stoke the rioters if they do end up pushing KP out? Or are you going to move on to the next one?
I'm more of the inflammatory writing kind of guy. Think of this as the American Revolution. Maybe I could be a Ben Franklin publishing pamphlets, that sort of thing. It is an awful long drive down to Portland to riot, so.
Jeez Louise. Well, you know what? I would not put public protests out of the realm of possibility if they get rid of Pritchard. In fact, I would not put out of the possibility that I would not lead public protests if they get rid of Pritchard. Let's just say that way. I'm not going to say I'm going to riot because that's probably like a threat, terroristic threat, and I could wind up in jail. I'm not going to say that. But I would say the practice facility, the Rose Garden, basically anywhere that's going to have television cameras around it, if they fire Pritchard, could certainly have 100, 200 people with signs saying, "Give us back our team, give us back our general manager," if that goes down. I'm going to predict that right now. That could definitely happen. On that note, KP, we should let that go or let you go. We'll talk soon, hopefully.
Hopefully on better terms. Maybe we can talk about basketball next time.
Honestly, I don't think there could be worse terms, could there?
Delirious, more serious, so killer did mixtapes. CEOs heard, now here come Big Cake. But one cat said, "Cam, you better recoup, for you back on your block, baby, dead on your stoop. But unhook me up with all this cheddar and loot. The best rap deal of all time, next to Snoop. Money more to clutch, money more to touch. I don't just rhyme, I own liquor stores and such. But yeah, yo, the rap game remind me of the crack game. Niggas wanna get their gun, then start the clap game for that fame. Bro, entertainment, sports, drugs, entertainment, to the reigning killer.